Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. A warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening. If you have just tuned in, believe me, you missed a great hour previous to this one. My friend and Bible mentor Jeff Verdorn was in studio, and you're going to want to go back and hear that one from the beginning. Go to myfaithradio.com. You can go over to the Afternoons with Bill Arnold show page, and it should be up in about an hour, I would guess. I would think so. And we're talking about law versus grace. And it was almost, we set up a courtroom battle, and you'll never guess what won. I think you already know, but you're going to want to go hear the whole hour. I'm looking at some of the verses here. I just want to kind of give you a few of them if you just tuned in. Romans 7:4 says, "So my brothers, you also died to the law through the body of Christ, that you might belong to another, to him who was raised from the dead, in order that we might bear fruit to God." Romans 7:6 says, "By now, by dying to what once bound us, we have been released from the law so that we serve in the new way of the Spirit and not in the old way of the written code." We've been set free from the law, and we live by grace. It's been a great hour. I will have to chew through that one on my own in the privacy of my study, because I learn so much when Jeff comes in, and it's a little bit like coming through a fire hose. It's not, he teaches with great passion, and I don't know, I just like him. All right, we've got a great hour coming up today. Let me tell you, I'm going to work backwards and start with what happens in the second half hour. We're going to have Sandy Patty, The Voice, joining us. That will be great. I'm looking forward to talking to her. She's written a book called The Voice, so that's going to be an interesting discussion. And then just in a couple of minutes, I'm going to bring on Claire Caldwell. She is an abortion survivor. So in other words, mom was going to have an abortion. That was the goal, and she survived it. She's now a pro-life advocate and a national speaker. And we are celebrating, today marks the 46th annual March for Life, Friday, January 18th. And that's on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. So that is 46 years of fighting for life. So let's take a little break. And then when we come back, we'll have Claire Caldwell on the line. I think she's got a little bit of a raspy voice. And she is gracious enough to stick with us and just let the Lord give her the strength she needs. So we'll take a break and be right back.
2019 is the 70th year ministry for Faith Radio. From its humble beginnings as a 1,000-watt AM station in Minneapolis to now 16 AM and FM broadcast signals in 9 markets across the upper Midwest and in Hartford, we've experienced God's blessing and provision, with countless lives experiencing life change, hope, and encouragement through the relevant Bible preaching, the family-focused teaching, and interactive talk programming available now 24/7 every day of the year. And this is all taking place because of the prayer and financial support of faithful listeners, some having partnered with us for generations. We're profoundly grateful. As an investor in Faith Radio, be encouraged to know that your gifts are bearing fruit and the ministry continues to expand. And radio is an effective way to bring the gospel into the homes and lives of hurting families looking for hope. Now, if you're not yet an investor in what God's doing through Faith Radio, let me encourage you to begin today. Make your gift online at myfaithradio.com.
I was fearfully and wonderfully made in my mother's womb. What an amazing thought that is. My guest, Claire Caldwell, met her birth mother in 2009 and found out that she survived the abortion that took the life of her twin brother. And she's going to share part of her story with us today. Claire, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I think you sound fantastic. So don't you worry about a thing.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the stress that comes along with having to do a radio interview when you don't feel like your voice is 100%. So I appreciate you sticking in there with us.
That's okay. I have a story to tell that God gave me, and I'm happy to tell it no matter what.
Yeah, I know. I know you are. And just the whole setup to your story is I just pause when I finish the sentence of meeting your birth mother and found out that you survived what was supposed to be your abortion.
yeah, I still can't believe that myself. When I think about it, it's pretty amazing. But God had different plans for sure.
Yeah, would you tell us your story with whatever voice you have left?
Yes. So I met my birth mother in 2009, so actually in March, so coming up on 10 years ago. And that came about because my sister and I are both adopted, and that was something we always knew. It was celebrated in our home. We like to say that it was our normal. And so we knew that we had birth mothers out there and that one day they could possibly become a part of our story later on in life, and that we were excited to meet them one day because they gave us, you know, the most important thing we'd ever been given, our life and our family. And so my sister met her birth mother. And I remember when I met her birth mother, I sat down with her and something inside of me just said, Claire, you need to lean over and you need to thank this woman who gave you your sister, because your life wouldn't be the same without your sister. And so I thanked her. And that was the moment that it clicked for me that there was a woman out there who had done the same thing for me, that had given me my life and my family, and that I hadn't taken the time to thank her or reach out to her. And I knew that she deserved that. And so I decided to search for my birth mother. And so I called my adoption agency on the phone, and they were able to contact my birth mother and give her the option of meeting me or just simply passing along what I wanted to say to her. And that was a thank you for giving me what she had given me. And luckily she agreed to meet me. And so I met her in Dallas, Texas, which was kind of an in-between spot for both of us. I live in Texas and she lives in another state. And so she brought her family and I brought my family, and we were able to kind of see, you know, where I came from, who I looked like, meet her family and get to thank her and love on her and share pictures. And so it was a great reunion. We laughed, we cried. We knew that we wanted to continue that relationship, and I knew that I wanted to continue to thank her for that gift of life and for that gift of my family. And so we set up a second meeting, and this time I would go fly to where she lived, and I would get to see, because she still lives in the same place where she was pregnant with me. And so I would get to see where she grew up and where, you know, she would have kept, where I would have lived if she would have kept me. And so that is when I found out my story. So in preparation for this meeting, all we knew was that I had a birth mother who was young, possibly, you know, a teenager, because my adoption papers weren't filled out very well. And we knew that she gave me my life and my family. But beyond that, we didn't know a lot. And so I wanted to give her something that would remind her, whether she used it or wore it every day or once a week or once a month or once a year, that it would remind her of my gratitude towards her and what an incredible, selfless and loving decision she had made for me in placing me for adoption with my family. And so I got her a ring and a necklace with my birthstone on it. And on the plane, on my way to visit her in her hometown for our second meeting, I was on the plane and I had this card to go with the gift. And I sat there with this empty card and I thought, where do I even begin? How do I even share with this woman how grateful I am, how wonderful my life has been because of her choice to place me for adoption? Where do I even begin? And I didn't know, and so all I wrote was, thank you for choosing life for me. That's the greatest gift I've ever received. And I sealed it up, and I added the card to the bag. And when I got there that day, I gave her this gift. And so she opened the bag, and she cried really happy tears as she put on the ring and the necklace. And then she read those words that were in that card Thank you for choosing life for me. That's the greatest gift I've ever received. And I watched as what were happy tears streaming down her face from receiving the necklace and the ring. I watched as those happy tears turned into very, very sad tears. And she grabs my hand, and I remember she was shaking. Her hand was shaking, and she was crying, and there was this pain in her eyes that I had never really seen before in anyone's eyes. And I thought, what in the world is she about to tell me? And little did I know that was the moment that would change my life forever. So we sat down on this bed in one of the bedrooms in her home, and she began to tell me about her life at the time that she was pregnant with me. She said that she was 13 years old. Her parents were divorced, and she lived with her mother, who worked multiple jobs to take care of her and her siblings. And she was, you know, looking for love in different places, and she found herself pregnant. And when she approached her mother, she was 13. And when she approached her mother, she said, "Mom, I'm pregnant." And her mom said, "Well, there's only one choice for us, and that was to have an abortion." And so my birth mother was driven that day to a local abortion clinic, and she had a surgical abortion at 5 months along in her pregnancy. At that abortion appointment, they told her what every single young girl, woman, man, family that enters into an abortion clinic still today, they told her what they still tell them, and that was that her life would go back to normal, that she wouldn't have this weight on her shoulders, her family wouldn't have this financial responsibility, she wouldn't have the embarrassment of walking through the halls of eighth grade pregnant, she wouldn't have to figure out who the father was. Ultimately, they said that her life would go back to normal, but her life never went back to normal.
All right, Clara.
4 weeks went by.
Yeah, I don't know where to take a natural break. We do have to take a quick one, but
okay.
Can we pick up exactly where we left off? Because I'm so sure. Riveted, I can't even stand it right now. Let me just take a little break. Claire Caldwell is my guest. She'll be with us in just 90 seconds. Be back. If you are like me, you have not breathed since the break. I'm talking to Claire Caldwell, and she is telling us her story as an abortion survivor. Her 13-year-old mother was taken to the abortion clinic on that day and was told everything was going to be good, things would go back to normal, and you wouldn't have to worry about anything. Claire, where do we go from here?
So my birth mother had that abortion, and 4 weeks went by, and things still didn't seem right. Things didn't seem like they were going back to normal. And so she asked her mother to take her back to that same abortion clinic where they told her that her abortion had been successful, but that she was still pregnant. They said that she was pregnant with twins and one had successfully been aborted, but one had survived. They asked her what she would like to do, and her mother quickly spoke up, and she said, "My daughter's still 13. She's still in eighth grade. She's still not ready to be a mother, and so we need a second abortion." But at this point, she was too far along. She was now 6 months along in her pregnancy, and so they said that they couldn't do that type of abortion there, but they referred her to an abortion doctor in Kansas who did do this type of abortion and who never turned anyone away. And so my birth mother was driven to Kansas to have a second abortion. And as she laid on the table to have that second abortion, the doctor said because the risk of infection could have been fatal for my birth mother, that they couldn't do it because they had ripped the sac that I was in when she was pregnant with me during that first abortion. And so she was driven back to her home state, and she was dropped off at the adoption agency, and she lived there for 2 weeks until I was born. I was born 2.5 months early. I had completely dislocated hips on both sides. I had club feet. I was on life support for 2.5 months in the hospital. And over my first 2 years of life, I was in body cast after body cast after body cast, as the doctors did everything they could to correct what that abortion had done to my body. For my first 18 years of life, I went to the Texas Children's Crippled Hospital for annual checkups. And the amazing thing is that God really had his hand on my life, because I am able to do every single thing that those doctors weren't sure if I was ever going to be able to do, and tried to prevent me from doing through that abortion. And so I'm incredibly grateful.
Wow. All right. Just as an aside, you went to Texas Children's.
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, because my good friend was the chief of neonatal care at Texas Children's. I don't know if you ever came in contact with him, but he's one of my heroes.
That's neat.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really neat. Actually, when my parents who adopted me and picked me up from the hospital, there was a doctor right after they brought me home from the hospital that was now the head of surgery at this hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And he was brand new, and he moved in about four houses down from them. And that's how I was able to get into that hospital. And so he would drive on his way home from work to go see me at my house. And he actually popped my hips back in place one day at their house, and that prevented me from having surgery and helped me be able to walk. So, yeah, like I said, there's so many God stories and God moments throughout this entire thing where God has just shown up and blessed us so incredibly much through this uncomfortable and painful story. But he's allowed me to share myself and even my daughter, who's five and wouldn't be here if that abortion had been successful in my life. He's just shown up, and his fingerprints are all over this story.
Claire, what do you think about, or do you think about, your twin brother very much?
I do. So I actually 100% believe God kind of showed this to me, that my twin brother was my father's only son. And the reason I say that is because my parents, my dad specifically, were from Texas. And so it's a big thing to have a senior and then a junior and mm-hmm. then a third and then a fourth for boys. And so when I found out I had a twin, I just knew that my daddy, he didn't have boys on this earth. He didn't get to pass on his family name, but he will, and we will meet his only son, my brother, one day in heaven. And so when I think about my twin, I am so grateful because I'm able to speak in honor of him, because this is something, specifically abortion. I grew up in a Christian home, but I never thought about that. I never knew that over 70% of people walking into the doors of abortion clinics are church-going Christians. And so I'm able to speak in honor of him, in honor of my daddy's only son. Mm-hmm. And so his life is being used in an incredible way.
Claire, did you have any pushback when you found out you were adopted? Did you go through any little rebellious phases or anything like feeling like you weren't wanted, or any of those emotions?
No, I didn't. This was something that I always knew. I actually don't remember finding out that I was adopted. And so it was instilled in me that this was my story and this was my normal, and this was something to be so grateful for and celebrate. And so I knew all my life the words that were spoken over me were that I was wanted and I was chosen, and by my adoptive parents, my mom and dad. And so I never had those doubts, because I knew who I was, not only in my family, but also when I was adopted into the body of Christ, that I was valued, I was wanted, and I was chosen. And so I ran with that.
Mm-hmm. Your compassion for your birth mother is so moving, and I would love to hear about the moment when you saw each other and hugged. And tell me what that was like.
That was an amazing moment. I imagined, you know, what she would be like and what she would look like. And if I would have her expressions or her hair or whatever that would look like. And I remember opening the door when I met her for the first time, and she was my height and looked so much like me. And we have the same demeanor, and we have the same passions. I was actually in nursing school at the time, and my birth mother was already a nurse. And so we have so many things in common. But I loved her, even before I met her, just because my parents, I owe them so much credit because they spoke so highly of a woman that would selflessly and lovingly give a child to a family like ours.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, Claire, not all tears are created equal, are they? You knew instantly that tears of joy went to tears of sadness when you were when she got that card. Do you think that she was going to one day tell you, or did you think that card prompted it?
She actually told my parents when we met the first time, and she asked if she should tell me, and they said, well, maybe wait until y'all can see each other again. Let's make this first reunion a happy one, and then you can tell her. And so I do think that she planned to tell me, and I'm so grateful that she did, because when I sprung it on her a couple months later, asking her if I could share this with anyone, I fully expected her to say no, because this was her deepest, darkest, most painful secret that she had not shared with anyone until she met me. Not even her children or her husband knew. And so when I asked her if I could share it with you and with other people across the country and the world, she said yes, because she didn't want another little girl like her or another woman or another family or even another generation to experience what we have because of abortion.
Mm-hmm. Wow, just a powerful story. I'm out of time, unfortunately. Question, does your birth mother know the Lord?
She actually became a Christian just a couple years ago.
Fabulous.
And so God has been working on her heart over the past few years, and she's been able to not only forgive herself, but she's been able to accept that God fully forgives her, and he can restore and heal and use this for his glory. And so it's been really encouraging to see that.
Thank you so much, Claire, for being my guest. You're amazing.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yep. Claire Caldwell has been my guest. Go learn more about her at her website, Claire, C-L-A-I-R-E, Caldwell, C-U-L-W-E-L-L.com, ClaireCaldwell.com. We'll take a short break and be back with The Voice, Sandy Patty. Welcome back to the show. I have on our studio line Sandy Patty. She's written a book called The Voice, Listening for God's Voice and Finding Your Own. And I think she's got about 40 Dove Awards and 5 Grammys, but who's counting? She has recently written a book called The Voice, and she's with me today. Hello, Sandy.
It is a pleasure to be with you today. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Just as a refresher, I went and watched you on YouTube sing Via Dolorosa in Spanish. You got gifts all over the place.
Oh, goodness. That's one of my, you know, I almost turned that song down, and I think back on that and think, what was I thinking? Well, it's just been one of those really special songs.
Yeah. My good friend Billy Sprague, I think, was one of the writers of that song.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, I met Billy in college at Texas Christian when I was 18. He was the very first guy I met, and he sort of took me under his wing and mentored me for a full year. He's just an exceptional human being.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. So I appreciate your journey, and more than anything, I appreciate your willingness to talk about stuff that's gone on in your life, because, you know, people are fascinated by artists and singers and people that are on stage, and we admire you, and we are inspired by you, and yet behind all the curtains and the scenes, there's other secrets that live on. Isn't that the case with just about everybody?
It's the cage with everybody. Yeah. And, you know, the best part of an artist's day is what everyone sees. The rest of it is just everyday showing up work, you
right.
know? And we're all people, and we're all in this journey together, and we all got stuff.
Right. You've been backstage before, like with tears streaming down your face minutes before going on stage, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where you and go. Afterwards. You
oh,
know?
Of course.
And you know, just kind of just wondering, you know, God, are you in this? I don't, you know, just so conflicted inside of my heart of why am I doing this? You know, just the insecurities, the things that all of us really face. But I know I've been challenged by other people sharing their stories, and that's why I wanted to write this book.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that you are kind of a safe place that people have shown up to and said, hey, Sandy, hear my story? Or
you know, in the last, you know, probably 10 or 15 years as I've been speaking a little bit more mm-hmm. and especially my time with Women of Faith, I have had people just say to me such encouraging things like you helped me see that I was not alone and I was able to be brave. And I know that's what other people who've gone before me have done for me. And so I now feel like it's my turn in a way to pick up that torch and shine a little bit of light for the generation coming behind me to say, you know what, it's okay. Come on, we're all in this together. And you're not alone.
Yeah, it's hugely humbling, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and freeing at the same time.
Mm-hmm. You had some experience as a child, and that gets imprinted into your body, doesn't it?
It does indeed. You know, when another person's pleasure means more than a child's innocence,
mm-hmm.
That is, there's just nothing but evil there.
Yeah.
And what it does to the child, what it did to me, was it shaped how I viewed the world. And I viewed the world from the lens of, it's all my fault. No one's going to believe me. You know, I'm the one who caused it. I'm the one who's damaged. So if that's what you think of yourself, you're never going to speak up. You already know you're damaged and not worth it. And it leaves a terrible imprint on a child's soul.
The evil is just, it's insane, because evil's been done to you, and now all of a sudden it seems that the problems are in your lap, that you have to work out the problems associated with what was done to you.
Mm-hmm. Here's what I have to say about that. I think that there are things in our lives, and I'm talking about myself as a child, that I am not responsible for, but there comes a point in my life that I have to be responsible to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to attend to my pain. When you don't attend to your pain, which I didn't for a very long time, there become things that I am responsible for. There are wrongs and sins that I did commit that I am responsible for. And the one thing that I love to tell people is, as soon as you can, attend to your pain. You're not responsible for it, but you are responsible to it. And if we want to live as victors in Christ, and not victims to our circumstance, we have to be responsible to our pain.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that if Satan can get you injured and wounded, he wants to do it as young as possible, because I think that's mm-hmm. when the most damage can be done. And I think also it seems that mm-hmm. you're going to be more open to lies and deception once you're so wounded. Think there's any truth to that?
Yes, I do believe that. And I actually think, too, the other real big lie of the enemy is that no one will believe us and you are alone.
Mm.
And that is the power of words as we begin to share our story, is you begin to understand, wait a minute, I am not alone here. This is unfortunately happened to other people. When we can speak the truth out loud, it no longer has the power over us. And I just believe that very strongly.
Mm-hmm. Sandy, so what needs to happen in someone's life if they're going to discover their voice through all of their past or pain or their suffering?
I think one of the first place to start, and it may sound odd, but I think the first place to start is you begin to listen very carefully to the people around you. And you begin to listen to those people who seem to want to portray that they have it all together. Or you begin to listen to those people who are willing to say, you know what, being a parent is just really hard work. But people who are willing to share a little bit of vulnerability,
mm-hmm.
those are the people that seem that may be the safer people. I say listen first because you don't want to share your story with the wrong people. It's so important that you share your story with someone who is safe. So you have to start listening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think while you're listening, you can begin to tell the story to yourself. Write it down in a journal. Write, even though it makes sense and it doesn't make sense or it's ugly and you think, I might be making this up, write it down. Just write your story in all the ugliness and bruised and broken pieces. Write it down. One thing it does is it gets the story out of you. You don't have to carry it as heavily, but it also begins to be a place where you can be honest and you can be truthful. And I'm also a very big fan of Christian counseling. But again, do your research, look online, read the reviews, ask questions, call, what are people saying about this counselor?
Mm-hmm.
Because going to the wrong person, it can be equally as damaging as the abuse in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So do your work, begin to listen.
When you have experienced some trauma, it seems to me that the best kind of counselor would be someone that is really well-equipped in dealing with trauma and doing trauma therapy.
Yes, I absolutely 1,000% agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a delicate walk, and someone must be skilled and trained to know when to push, when to just let some grief settle in and be still. It is and it is not an overnight fix.
Mm-hmm.
It is a journey.
Right.
It is a journey. But I believe God will go with us every step of the way.
Yeah. Sandy, how long was this a barking dog in your life before you started to do some real hard work therapy on it?
It happened when I was 6.
Okay.
And I didn't speak it aloud until I was 35.
Okay.
And didn't really understand how long it shaped me.
Mm-hmm.
So when I began to do the work at 35, I would say it was still a good 10 years before it was able to be in its rightful place.
Mm-hmm.
As part of my story only, not as a shaping part of my story.
Mm-hmm. What was the self-esteem issues like growing up, like in middle school, high school?
The self-esteem issues were, I presented a very confident person, but underneath, I was so very shy. I had trouble with words. So when the teacher would ask us all to read aloud, oh my goodness, I just panicked waiting for my turn because I stumbled over words so terribly.
Mm-hmm. Like easy words?
Yeah, just like, we'd all be reading, something from, the appropriate age
sure.
reader.
Sure.
And I would just kind of stumble over the words. And I think I was just nervous And I didn't process information very fast when it came to reading. I did in other things, but when it came to reading, I was a very slow reader, and my comprehension was very slow. And so, you know, I just would just panic. If you gave me a lot of time, I could tell you the whole story, but I couldn't do it in the time frame, you know, of a classroom. And so that just added. I also, you know, was a little bit heavy, and so, you know, that added, and I had just terrible nicknames like Fatty Daddy and, you know, all of that kind of stuff that just added to someone who already had a limb of your broken and your damage.
Mm-hmm. All right, Patty, I want to talk about safe people, and let's just say, for example, I consider myself a safe person and you consider me a safe person. And you come to me and tell me something, what should me as the safe person do?
Well, the first thing is to listen and to maybe just offer some, I am so sorry that this has had to be part of your story. Some kind of validation for the person who's really risking a lot to share. And sometimes when we don't know what to respond with, a great phrase is, wow, tell me more about that. Because sometimes when someone comes to you and you're a safe person, you still don't necessarily know what to say. And so tell me more about that says, I'm invested here. I'm gonna lean in and I'm gonna listen. And I think also to just help that person know what the next step may be. To be a resource to say, you know, well, tell me what you want to do now with this information. Tell me what you see. Where? How do you see it moving forward? And then you can offer some insight. But I think when you don't know what to say, just validating and asking questions is a great place to give that person who's risking it. They know by your response it's a safe place.
I'm talking to Sandy Patty. I'm going to take a little break. Her book is The Voice, Listening for God's Voice and Finding Your Own. We'll take a short break and be right back. Welcome back to the show. I have on our studio line Sandy Patty. She's written a book called The Voice, Listening for God's Voice and Finding Your Own. And as we were talking about a very difficult part of Sandy's life and history, involved abuse at a young age. And we were talking about a safe person, Sandy. And let's say, for example, I find out that you were abused as a young child by your uncle, and I know your uncle, and the truth is I want to go kill him now.
Yeah, and right, and that was my parents when I shared with them. But the thing that I needed from them was ultimately what they gave me, and that was I didn't need them to go hurt anyone. I needed them to listen to me, and that's what they did.
And I
know what you're saying. The response is just the anger that this can happen in this world.
I'm flooded.
Is unbelievable.
Yes.
It's just devastating.
Yes. Thank you for acknowledging that.
It is. It's absolutely devastating.
Well, what about self-medication?
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of times we find things that are going to quiet those voices because we don't want to hear them, or we think they're lying, or we know they're not lying and we don't want to hear them. And so food for me was, and often continues to be for me, that place where I can eat my feelings big time. I think there's, you know, there's food, there's alcohol, there's being too busy, there's medication, there's maybe volunteering for one too many things at the church. Wait, did I say that out loud?
Yeah, I think you did.
there are there are lots of ways that we've gotten really creative at either outrunning our voices, or we've shoved them down, which is what I do when I eat. I just shove them down.
Mm-hmm.
And to let those voices speak sometimes is just really, really hard. And you can't do it alone. You need someone who's professional, who knows how to walk someone through the healing journey of this is really important.
Mm-hmm. Sandy, when did you start paying your light bill with your singing career?
That's a great way to ask that question.
Well, I mean, everybody seems to have two or three jobs, and they have two or three jobs their whole life. But you are clearly at the top of the heap, and I'm thinking, how long before you were able to put everything else aside and just say, no, I can sing for a living?
Yeah. I was probably in my late 20s.
Okay.
I did several years as a student assistant with a junior high music teacher. And I loved that. And I taught piano a lot. All of my jobs were surrounded by music, but they never really, you know, and I told my kids this, please get another job besides music until you can, I'm going to use your phrase, until you can pay your light bill.
Right.
so I would say it was probably my late 20s. I had the sweetest opportunity to travel with Bill and Gloria Gaither.
Okay.
And got to sing in their concert. And that really opened a lot of doors
I bet.
For me. And so I'm so grateful for them for that. But I got my late 20s, I would say.
Uh-huh. I think the point I'm going to try to get to is for someone like yourself, who's just got all this, you know, talent in this one specific area, and you can quickly come to rely on this for your identity. So I would imagine it's important to be looking at all different aspects of life and to explore other areas to discover, you know, really everything God has created you to be.
Absolutely. And, you know, I really did struggle with that a lot and tried to be who I was on stage, off stage,
mm-hmm.
and realized I was going about it very backwards. And so as I began to Bible study fellowship played a huge part in my life and began to put God's word in my heart. And as I began to see that God just loved me, just cause, I didn't need to, you know, work harder than anybody else or sing higher than anybody else, or I just needed to bring him me. That was pretty revolutionary in my mind and in my heart. I somehow couldn't believe he just loved me, just cause.
Yeah.
But I began to understand that and tried to then be consistent who I was off stage, whether I was in the line at the grocery store
mm-hmm.
or whether I was on stage in arena. I needed to bring the same heart because that's what worship is.
Mm-hmm.
Is Romans 12, 1 and 2. Present your whole self as a living sacrifice,
mm-hmm.
holy and acceptable. Very little to do with singing. Very a lot to do with who we are every day.
Yeah. I was talking to our engineer on the way into the studio, and I was saying to him I was going to be talking to you, and he said, oh, boy, I remember seeing her on the national anthem, and that was one of kind of a big breakthrough moment. And I didn't know what that was in regards to. Would you refresh my memory on that experience?
Yeah, I will. In 1986, the Statue of Liberty was being refurbished and then being rededicated. And so I was part of a group of artists. We made a record with a lot of patriotic and inspirational songs that was going to be used to help raise money for the Ellis Island Foundation. And so I was asked to do the Star Spangled Banner, and they were going to write a brand new second verse. There are actually several verses to the Star Spangled Banner that we don't ever use. But they wanted to have written a brand new second verse. So I went in the studio and sang it, and it was just a wonderful arrangement. David Clydesdale is the one who did the arrangement, and it was just lovely. And it was really high at the end, and David Clydesdale said, you'll never have to sing it again. Well, ABC owned Benson Records at the time, or Word Records at the time. And so ABC then in July did this big weekend-long celebration of the Statue of Liberty. At the end of the weekend, there was a video montage of the highlights of the weekend. And the underscore of that video montage was the Star Spangled Banner that I had just recorded. So I was literally at home watching the celebration on TV when I heard this music that sounded vaguely familiar, but I couldn't really place it. And then the phone started ringing, and my mom said, "Are you listening? You are on ABC." So I often refer to that as the best gig I ever had, because I was home. And yet, so much stuff was happening nationally.
Yeah.
So that's the story of the Star Spangled Banner.
What a great story. Sandy, all right, you lay your head on the pillow at night, and you say, "Dear Jesus," then what comes after that?
Mm-hmm. "Dear Jesus, thank you for your love and faithfulness that I have found in this day. Be with all of my children," and then I name them, which is, that takes a long time. And then I pat my husband and thank him for my husband. Pray that we have sweet and gentle rest for the day tomorrow, knowing that God is already in the day tomorrow. Mm.
Just beautiful. Thank you so much. What a blast.
You are so welcome. It's been fun. For a minute there, I forgot we were having an interview.
Yeah, me too.
We were just talking.
Me
it
too.
Was great.
I sure hope
thank you so very much.
Yeah, I'm sure hope they had the mics on, because if they didn't, we're in big trouble.
And blessings on you as you move throughout your day.
Thanks.
And do what God has called you to do. You've blessed so many people. Thank you
so much. Sandy Patty's been my guest. Her book is called The Voice. We will take a short break and wrap up the show.
Faith Radio, where you can find relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching to help you grow in your faith. Our mission is to lead people to Christ and nurture believers in their faith through Christ-centered media. Find out more about your favorite programs and features and find helpful articles on relevant topics such as marriage and family, finances, health and wellness, and spiritual growth, all at myfaithradio.com.
Thank you so much to Sandy Patty and also to Claire Caldwell. And, of course, my friend Jeff Verdorn made it for a fantastic couple hours today. Thank you for listening. If you missed any of it, definitely head over to myfaithradio.com. Check out the show page, Afternoons with Bill Arnold, and you can see and get any of those podcasts. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you, and God loves you. I love you. Station love. We all love you. And as you lay your head on that pillow, just know that God's working out his plan in your life. Good night, everybody. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.